Good afternoon. So, last time we started talking about POSIX. We mentioned that, well, we're looking at XV6, which was like a Unix-based operating system, based on actually one of the original versions of Unix, produced at AT&T. We mentioned that there's this whole family of Unix-like operating systems, Linux being, and OS X being the most prominent examples today. But there used to be a lot more, and they were concerned about people being able to interoperate between them. So there's this standard for Unix called POSIX that was put together in the 80s and 90s that specifies from a source level and from terms of like the command line how Unix systems should behave, so you can write programs that should work on all of them that follow this standard. We talked about the POSIX mechanisms for creating and managing processes, which, you know, match what the original Unix did roughly, and which, well, in the original Unix had a particular design where basically most of these operations were system calls, even though that's not actually required by POSIX. And we had to manage processes. One of the things we want to do is make new processes. So how do we do that? Well, the POSIX operation for this was fork, which creates a new process by cloning the current one. So you start out with one process running a program, and then you have two processes running the same program. So that handles creating a new process. We learn that basically this turned into, we have a process control block, and we just copy everything in it for the most part. And we have some naming here. We called the new process the child and the original the parent. And if we didn't just cloned everything and then kept going, well, we'd have two things returning from fork and keeping going. We want them to actually behave differently. So to help us do that, the fork function returns 0 in the child process and the new child PID in the parent. It happens that this is probably the only way we could really find the new child PID. So that's very helpful, in addition to letting us have different things happen in the child versus the parent process. Now, this isn't what we usually think of when we want to run a new process. Usually we think new process means new program. In POSIX, they've kind of decoupled these things. Maybe that was not a great choice. So if you want to run a new program, the way you do that is with one of these exec functions, which in the current process runs a different program. So it replaces, in our current process control block, the stuff for a current program, so those pointers to the memory that's loaded from our current executable with a different one, and starts that different one at the beginning of main generally, so it resets all the registers and so on, start at the very beginning. That's how we run a different program that doesn't create a new process, it just reuses the current process control block and the current process ID in the same open files, as we'll talk more about today, to run a new program, but creating a new process is still that separate fork operation. And one of the things we often wanted to do when we were running a different program is, well, we wanted to run it in a new process, so we use fork with exec, but then we often wanted to wait for that to finish. If we think of running like the ls command, we don't want to start the ls command and then ask for the next command to run. We want to wait for the ls command to finish. So how do we do that waiting operation? So we need some help from the operating system interface to do that. And in POSIX, we have this wait PID function, which waits for a child process. So you give it the process ID of a child process, and it waits for it to finish. And in the process, it retrieves how it finished. So retrieve the status information, which includes what was passed to exit, or maybe it didn't exit. Maybe it crashed. Maybe we pressed Control C, and that's why it exited. It retrieves information indicating how it terminated, regardless of whether it was normal or abnormal. Those are things we covered last time. So questions about things we covered last time. Yes? Can you use fork to make a child of a child? Yes, there's no restriction on calling fork if you're in a child process. It just means that that new called fork will have its own idea of a parent and child, you know, independent of the other one. Does that answer your question? Okay. where does exec get the information to? To get to run, start the, to get the run process. So our arguments to exec were, we did exec v, we had the program path, so a file on disk, and the arguments. So the program path tells where to load the executable, all the code and the initial data, and sort of information about, you know, we have a standard place, we put a stack and all that. And the arguments are something we copy to the stack of the program before we start it. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's finish up talking about WaitPID. So last time we mentioned, you know, the way WaitPID works. So typically we'd imagine that we spawn a new process, it does something, most commonly runs a different program, and that something exits, and WaitPID allows us to, you know, say, okay, it probably hasn't finished yet, we'll wait for it, and after it exits, WaitPID will return, and also tell us how it exited. But it can also be the case, just because we can't predict, you know, how fast things will run, whether the child process will get to run earlier or later, depending on the timing of things. You know, it might be the case that we call WaitPID after the child exits, and that is fine. So something that maybe is not so obvious about supporting this is that this means that the operating system needs to keep around information about how a program exited until someone calls WaitPID for it. It also means it can't reuse that process ID number until that call to WaitPID happens. So that's something that this supporting this requires. You mentioned that you can do multiple processes. We showed sort of a code example, so here's sort of more of a diagram. So like commonly you might start two programs. So you'll have a fork of first child process and a second one. That's perfectly fine. And then we can call WaitPID. In this example, I have chosen to wait for the first one, then the second one. And it happens when we wait for the first one, we actually have to wait for it. And when we wait for the second one, it already finished. And that's perfectly fine. And in both cases, we retrieve how it finished. And that's what WaitPID is going to put in that status variable. So questions about WaitPID and how it works with things that have already finished or multiple processes? Yes?
If we don't do anything in between, would it matter if we waited for the first or the second?
If we don't do anything in between, would it matter if we wait for the first or the second? So if we think of how this would work on something like XV6, there's not really a way we can not do anything in between, because what's going to happen is we're going to call the WaitPID system call wrapper function, most likely, or some library function that calls the system call. It's going to do some work and return and start running us. And the OS has no idea that the next thing we're going to do is call WaitPID again. All it knows is that it needs to run some of our code. So even if all that our code does is call WaitPID again, the OS still needs to run it. And because it can't know when it returns from the first WaitPID that there's another WaitPID. Does that answer your question? Question, would the order matter if you waited for first or second? So it shouldn't change the behavior. Yeah, it shouldn't change the behavior precisely because it doesn't matter if we call WaitPID before or after things finish. You should get the same result. Yes? Sorry? If we have multiple, is there something special about which one we wait for, or? So the question is, so if you have multiple child processes, WaitPID takes its first argument of what to wait for, and we can specify any of our child processes we want, or we can specify the special value of -1 to say wait for whichever one finishes first. As long as it's actually a child process, it's fine. You can't wait for something that isn't a child process, so like if you know another program made a process, It's not your child process. You can't wait for it. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
It looks like the parent has two child, and what does a parent PID have?
So question, it looks like the parent has two children, so what is the parent PID? So the PIDs, remember, are just numbers. Right? So we mentioned that, well, POSIX doesn't say how they're assigned, but a common scheme might be you assign them sequentially. This is, in fact, how XV6 assigns process IDs. So maybe the parent would be assigned ID PID 10, and then the first child would be assigned PID 11, and the second would be assigned PID 12. That's perfectly fine. And our first and second are the PIDs that the parent would have gotten returned from fork. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so that's wait PID. And since we know how that works with execv, it's a little exercise. So I have some code here which uses execv and wait PID and fork. And I'm asking what outputs are possible. And we're calling the echo command like the example we showed you from XV6. Outputs its arguments to standard out. Talk to your neighbors.
traditional child processes. They call it when they have one person who knows what it wants.
Oh.
And then call it the employees and other kids exec from those processes. Because you're not really sure which one you work is going to be.
No.
So when exec doesn't fail, it doesn't return because we have nothing to return to. We replace the whole program that we could have returned to.
Echo always calls you after it runs exec.
Yes.
Are you allowed to pass the const char star overray into exec in the first place? Does it have to be a char star?
I think you're allowed to pass a const char star. If not, this code should have a test. Okay. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks the answer is option A? Option B? Option C? Option D? Option E? Okay, option F, option G, that none of the, none of A, B, and C are possible. There's some other output we'd get. Okay, so it seems like we have agreement on A and C, and that's what I get. So what we do here is essentially we start a process. We have our first child runs echo L1, because that's what's set up by just before we call exec. The second one runs echo L2, and then these happen at some point in time. We don't know exactly when. And we wait for them, and that, those two waits will terminate. We wait twice, because we have a loop with, and those two waits will finish when they're all done. But we don't know exactly when they do their output, so it could be L1 first, L2 first, or something. Okay. Questions? Yes?
So essentially the waits have no effect.
So question, essentially the weights had no effect? Yeah. Yes. So the weights here, the only effect they had is that we didn't exit from this main until both of the child processes were finished. Okay, other questions? Yeah. So how would I change it to make sure it's always A? So if I waited before I forked the second time, that would do that. Okay, other questions? Yeah. Question, what happens after the children run exec B? Our current process control block now only points to stuff for echo. So it's going to run echo until echo does something to stop running, which probably it does by accident. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Question about args 1 of extra I, what does that do? So we have this array args. This is index 0 is the string echo initially, index 1 is the string arg, index 2 is the string null. This replaces index 1 arg with extra of that index, which is either the string L1 or L2. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So as some of you looking at our schedule have seen, our next assignment is about shells. So a shell is the name for a program that allows a user to run an application. So we've talked about sort of the programmer's way of starting, managing processes and starting them. We need some way for a user to actually do this. So we have some program which kind of wraps for a user those functions. And you most commonly seen this, I guess not maybe most commonly, but most directly seen this through a command line. And our upcoming homework is to make a simple shell. So the command line you've used before, but the shell is a more general term. So they're graphical shells. So if you think of the OS X Finder or the Windows Explorer, those are shells. They let you run programs. You don't do it by typing commands. You do it by double-clicking things and things like that. But they're shells. They're ways of users starting and managing processes, you know, supplying arguments to them and so on. So command line isn't the only type, but that's the type we're going to have you do in an assignment, and we're going to do it based on the POSIX specification, so the Unix design for what a shell should look like. And you've probably used the command line before, so I assume you're familiar with kind of basic things, like you can change directory, and you can run commands with arguments. There's some other features that maybe are not so obvious. So one is that it searches for programs. We've seen with exec, you have to pass the path to a program, which is typically not what you're typing on a command line. Like you type ls, typically on a Linux system that runs a program that's in /bin/ls. And you type make to like build xv6 that runs a program called make that's not in the current directory, that's typically in /user/bin. And the shell handles searching for those programs. So you can say, how does that work? So the convention on POSIX is that there's something called an environment variable. Well, every process has a bunch of environment variables, so which is basically a set of key value pairs in addition to the arguments, which you can think of like as somehow attached to the process control block. And there's a path environment variable, which by convention is used by the shell. So this is just, you know, what POSIX specifies should happen. And it typically contains a list of directories separated by colons. And when the shell is asked to run ls, it's going to check each of those directories. They're in ls here. If so, let's run that. A way you might implement this is you just go through the list and try to exec every, you know, for in every directory until the exec works. And when it works, the exec won't return. So you're done. So questions on our searching our path. Okay. So another feature that you may have seen in shells is that you can run things in the background. So in POSIX like shells, that's specified by using an ampersand, and it says basically just run it and let it keep going. So you might think, how do you implement that? Well, it's actually not that much difficult to do the basics of it, because the most important part is just that you aren't calling wait on it right away. That's the most important part of doing things in the background. So that's most of what that ampersand does. There's a few other little details, but that's mostly it just doesn't wait on it right away. So there's some other features which we're going to talk about today which have to do with files and the program's input and output. So we're going to have to talk about how that works. So one is redirection. So you can run a program, and the program would normally output something to the, you know, the terminal. And you want that output to instead go to some file, in this example, output.txt. So you can do that with a command in the shell, and the shell will arrange for when the program tries outputting normally, it will go to output.txt instead of to the terminal. You can also do the same thing for a program's input. A program would normally take input from the terminal. You can make it instead, when it tries to read from its normal input, it will read from some input file. And the syntax in POSIX uses this greater than or less than sign for that. And there's also an extension of this called pipelines, where you can take one program, and rather than sending its output to a file, you'll send it to another program. So in this example, we take some program would output stuff that would normally go to the terminal. Instead, it will become the input to the second program, which in this case is some filter. Some filter will take that as input and then output normally. So questions on sort of what the semantics of this redirection and pipelines are. Okay. So, as I mentioned, we have a shell assignment where you have to implement redirections pipelines and, of course, running commands normally. It is simplified in a bunch of ways. It is for Linux or another POSIX system. It's not for XV6, because XV6 is not featureful enough, and also, so you can like write it in C++ with the string class, which I assume many of you would find very convenient. So this is going to do some things that normal shells don't. One of them is going to print the exit code of programs, of all programs in a pipeline, of all programs, like, period, I should say. So it's going to always print exit codes, which your normal shell doesn't do. Also, we have some simplified syntax. So if you look at my examples here, like, it's you can have a greater than here, and it turns out you could have, you know, some space between that and the input.txt. We're going to simplify things and require everything to be space white space separated. So rather than, you know, needing to support me specifying an output file to redirect to with or without white space before it, I'm just going to say when I do that, I'm always going to have a greater than that's separated by spaces, so you can just separate the whole line by spaces to figure out what to do. Because this is a class about like how do you manage processes, not how do you parse text. And I don't want you to spend your time figuring out how to do text parsing in C or C++. Questions about basic goals of our shell assignment? Yes? Sorry?
Do we print the exit code or not?
So you print all the exit codes of all programs, regardless of whether there's a pipeline or not. Yes. And there's a full assignment spec and also tests should help with that. Okay. So to deal with redirection and pipelines, we need to know about how files work. Now, as I alluded to very briefly earlier, in the Unix design, which POSIX is codifying, everything, well, not everything, but a lot of things are files. This is one interface for dealing with terminals, printers, all sorts of devices, for dealing with regular files that store things on disk or other storage devices, for dealing with networking. If you want to communicate with another machine, you're going to get a file, or for communicating with other programs on the same machine. And a file and the Unix design is distinguished by having these four operations or some variants of them. You have some open operation to set up and what we say open a file. We have a read operation and a write operation. Some files you might be only able to read or write, but these are the sort of basics we have. And we have a close operation when we're done. This is sort of the basic interface that all these files provide. You know, that's common no matter what really is underneath. So we have this common idea of, well, we have to open things. So when you use a file, you have this special open operation where some setup happens and also typically where things like access control happens. If you don't have permission to read a file, you'll find out when you open it, not when you try to read or write it, most commonly. They're byte-oriented. So we saw the write system call takes a number of bytes, and the read system call, you know, on a Unix-like system is typically the same way. These operations work in terms of bytes, even though the underlying things the files represent might not work that way. Like, the networks typically don't work a byte at a time. And hard drives and solid-state disks don't work a byte at a time. But that's the interface we're going to provide. And the operating system is responsible for making that work, even though that's not really what's happening underneath it. And we have this explicit close operation that when you want to stop using a file, you can close it somehow. So we see this open, read, write, and close. And if you've done stuff with files in C and C++, which you almost certainly have because you've output things to a terminal, you probably haven't used these. You've instead used things from standard I/O or IO stream. It's like CN or scanf and cout or printf. And these things are implemented using read and write on a Unix-like system. So on Linux, when you call printf or you call use cout, it's going to use write as part of its implementation. So you might say, okay, so I can use write when I want to and cout when I want to. And if you do that, you'll probably get into trouble. And the reason why is that, like, cout, it wants to not call write so much. So it's like going to put stuff in a temporary storage and write it all at once. And if you aren't synced up with that, you might get confusing outputs. And for input, you know, when you try to use CN to read something, it's going to try to read a bunch of stuff, and maybe it only gives you the stuff, you know, the first few characters right now until you call CN again. And if you try to mix that with read, you'll get very confused because you won't get all the input that you thought you would get. So probably be careful about mixing it. We're going to talk about the low-level read and write API because that's sort of what's typically the system call interface. But, you know, if you're using this library interface, be very careful about mixing it with the system call interface because they are using the system calls and kind of expect to be the only ones doing it unless you, like, tell them, hey, really stop keeping things or stop, like, reading extra stuff. You know, I want to read too. So questions about mixing with standard I/O and I/O stream? I mentioned that we have our typical files. So the files you think of most often are what POSIX calls regular files, which are just named collections of bytes. These are files that are storage. They also have some other information we'll talk about when we talk about file systems. And typically these are organized in directories that contain files and directories. And on Unix-like systems, we have a hierarchy which starts with a special directory called the root directory, which we name with a single slash. So in this case, in that slash directory, there's a directory called net, which contains a directory called zf14, which contains a directory called crfvd, and so on. And directories can contain other files, including and directories. Mostly they contain regular files. It turns out they can contain other types of files too, though typically you think of it as containing regular files. So if we have one of these names, then we can use this function open to access such a file. So open takes as its first argument a path, so which is sort of the name of a file. And there's two ways you can specify paths on POSIX systems. So one is as what they call an absolute path, which is based on the root directory, so which is a common base directory for everything on the system. So in this case, I have from the root directory, I go into foo, into bar, and then I find a file that text, or based on something known as the current working directory, which is different, possibly different for every process. It's what you change by using the cd command in your shell, or if you're doing it from C code, you use the chdir library call in POSIX. So in this case, I'm saying in the current working directory, you know, what would have been set with cd in a shell, I want the directory quox which contains other.txt. So questions on path names? Yes? Sorry, if it doesn't have a... So a question, if there's no single slash in front, do we assume we're in a different directory? If there's no slash at the beginning, it's based on the current working directory. Other questions? Yes? The question is, why are we passing a character pointer for path? So, in C, strings are typically represented as arrays of characters that are terminated with a null character, that is a character with the value 0. So this is a pointer to the beginning of such an array that Open expects. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yes. Question, can we use C++, are we using C++ for the parent assignment? My example code is in C++. The POSIX APIs are C functions, so you'll need to deal with the fact that, for example, open expects a C style string and not a C++ style one. But that doesn't stop you from calling it from C++. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so one other thing you might find a little weird is that the open function returns a number, which seems like maybe it doesn't make sense that, like, if you like use, say, like open in Python or ifstream or fopen in C, you're used to like an open file is represented by like some data structure or some class. But here we're returning a number. This number is known as a file descriptor. And if open fails, it returns -1, which is not a valid file descriptor. And a file descriptor is an index into a table of what POSIX calls open file descriptions for each process. So every process in the process control block, we have this table of open file descriptions, which is basic, usually an array, maybe not. And when you're calling a system call like write, you'll pass an index into this table, which we call a file descriptor. Yes? What does that array hold? It holds pointers to information about the files you have open. And we'll see what it looks like in XV6 as a very concrete example. Okay. So the other thing open takes was flags, which you can specify with bitwise OR. So we had our examples here where I had read only, or I could open for reading and writing, or I could open for writing and create it if it doesn't exist, and also truncate it if it does exist. And you can look up these flags in the documentation, which is why I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time with them in lecture. But there's some flags. There's also a mode field, which specifies the permissions of newly created files. Well, we might talk about that way later on in the semester when we talk about access control. Yes?
So for the earlier one, how do we know if we're going to use the absolute path or we're going to use the current directory path?
This question, how do we know if we're going to use the absolute path or current directory path? So what you pass to open is interpreted by first looking at the first character, and if it's a slash, it's an absolute, interpreted as an absolute path, otherwise it's a relative path. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So I mentioned that file descriptors are an index into like a table or an array. So in XV6, there's an array in the process control block called ofile, which is an array of open files. And this is an array of pointers to information about the file. And index 0 of a file is file descriptor 0. And if a file isn't open, we just have a null pointer in here. So close file is just a null pointer in this array. And this points to a struct file. And what is that? So in XV6, this is what a struct file looks like. And XV6 is chosen to have one struct for all the types of files. You might imagine in different OS designs, maybe you'd have like a class with subclasses or some other design, but they chose one struct for all the types, and they have this type field to indicate, is this a normal file, which they would call an inode for reasons that we'll discuss when we talk about how file systems work, or a pipe, which is a special file used to talk to another process we'll get to at the very end of today. They have this reference count. So it turns out that multiple processes or can have pointers to the same open file, and a single process can have multiple pointers to the same open file. If you think of like standard out and standard error are often the same thing, well, it's a pointer to the same open file. If you think of, you know, running two different programs in the same terminal, well, they have the same open file to for their output. So it's actually pretty common for that to be the case. And we don't duplicate the actual struct files, so instead we count how many pointers there are to it as this reference count, so when it goes to 0, we can free up the memory and not leak. memory, which would be really bad to do in the kernel because there's no way of freeing it until we reboot. We also have information about whether reading or writing is allowed. So remember when we opened, we passed read-only or read-write, write-only. So this was where we remember what the user asked to do. XV6 uses carers instead of booleans because 90C did not have booleans. Then we have some pointers to the actual implementation of the file, which we won't talk about much yet. We'll talk about how file sizes work much later in the semester. And also this offset, which is the location in the file. So like for a file on disk, it's, you know, where in the file on disk are we reading from? From the beginning or the middle or the end? Some questions on this struct file, this information about an open file. So the question, how does this relate to the return value of open? So return value of open is an index into this array. So using that index, we can get a pointer to one of these. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so these are what our array points to. And there's some special indices into the array. And POSIX just makes this convention that our default input will be index 0. Our default output will be index 1. Our default output for errors will be index 2. So they call that standard input, standard output, standard error. And the POSIX in the header file unicenary-h defines constants for these, so you don't have to memorize the numbers 0, 1, and 2. And this is just a convention they use, that we'll use these indices for that. And since programs follow that convention, like when you use something like printf or printf in C or print in Python, it by default goes to standard output file descriptor 1, because that's the convention about where the output should go by default. And when you read, it default reads from file descriptor 0, because that's the convention about where you read from by default. And so if we're writing our program in a normal command line, we usually expect these all to be the terminal. Except, you know, if we did something to explicitly change that. Okay, so questions about these sort of standard numbers? Yes? Where do you set these? So these are sort of hard-coded numbers. Now, there's a question of, like, how do you make something be set to 0, 1, or 2? And we'll get to that later. There's a problem that you probably saw, which is that, well, open just returns a new number. It's not going to set it to 0, 1, and 2, so we're going to need some other library call to be able to set a file descriptor with a particular number to do something. Okay, other questions? Okay, so we also mentioned there's a close operation. So closing a file descriptor deallocates that index in that array of open file descriptions. And basically, in XV6, this maps to setting it to null. Now, I mentioned we can have multiple file descriptors that point to the same open file description. So, for example, if I'm running in a terminal and my standard out and standard error are both the terminal, if I close standard error, I can still write to standard out, or vice versa. Because that means that close better not actually close that whole thing down. And the way XV6 implements this is it tracks how many references there are and only actually closes it down when there's no more references. And close has a return value. You might say, why does it do that? Well, it can fail. It returns 0 on success, negative 1 on failure. Most common example of a failure is that if you write something to a file, sometimes the OS doesn't write it to disk immediately, and it might only detect that it couldn't actually write it to disk on a close. So that's some way of telling you about errors. So questions about close. Okay, so let's look at what shell redirection looks like. So to think about that, we're going to need to think about how our file descriptors interact with fork and exec, because that's the other thing we're doing here. So when we do exec, it doesn't change the file descriptors. So if we set up our output to go to a different place before we exec, the new program, when it tries to write to its default output, file descriptor 1 by convention, it's going to write to that new place. When we fork, it's going to copy that array of pointers. So we're going to have pointers to the same place. So before and after the fork, you know, we have pointers in the same place. So we have our standard in points to the same open file description as before, standard out. And to implement the redirection operation, we want to run the new program, the child process, which is going to run our command with exec, with its output file descriptor not being the original standard output, being our file. So we just want to change where that points in the child. We probably want to leave it the same in the parent, so later on when we run, when we prompt for the next command, the prompt goes to the terminal and not to that file. So what we're missing is just the operation to do this assignment in red, which we'll see later. There's going to be a library call to do that. So the pattern we're going to use to implement this redirect operation is that we're going to do our same fork, exec, and wait, but before we exec in the child, we're going to open the new files and set them up to be our output or input. Typically how we're going to do this. And how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to open the file, we've seen how to do that, and we're going to use an operation to make the file descriptor standard out, which would be number 1 for redirecting standard out. So what we want to do, if we think of XP6 in particular, is basically we want to assign index 1 to be a copy of what we just got from open, to that index in the array. We want to do this assignment. We can't actually do that because this is all in the kernel. We don't have access to it. But fortunately, there is a system call and corresponding library call for doing this. And the one that POSIX defines is dupe2, which takes a from file descriptor and a to file descriptor and does this assignment. In addition, and also updates like reference counts so we don't like leak memory or have dangling pointers. So this is how we're going to do this second part of after we open output.txt, how do we make it our standard output in the child? We're going to use this dupe2 call. And the dupe2 call is also going to take care of some other things you might be worried about. You might be worried about, wait, don't we have to close the thing before we replace it? Dupe2 will take care of that for us. It's going to realize that, you know, if we close standard out, it's going to take care of, you know, realizing that we need to deallocate what was previously there sometimes. It's going to handle all of that. So code that uses this might look like this. So here I have code which redirects standard out to output.txt. So first I tell the printf functions to clear their buffer. I mentioned earlier that if we don't do this, you might get weird interleaved output, so I tell it, make sure you've written everything out you already have written. Then I open my output.txt for writing, creating it if needed, and truncating it if it already exists. And then I do this dupe2 operation. So remember, this is roughly equivalent to assigning our standard out pointer to be the same as the FD pointer. So after we do that, if we write to standard out or we write to FD, they're going to look up the same pointer in that array, do this write to the same place, and then I close the original. So this is roughly equivalent to just setting the FD entry in the array to null. So it doesn't affect the standard out one, which still points to the output.txt file. So then I can write to output.txt by just printing to my default output. Yes?
Can you
question, what is this process for? So this is showing the how we redirect our normal output to go somewhere else, which is what we would do for implementing that redirection operation in the shell. This question, how are we going to do this to redirect our child's output? So the typical pattern will be is that we'll do all this stuff in the child before we exec. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so this is our redirection operation. Okay, so we've seen that we can think of our open, our dupe to close, and fork operations in terms of how they affect our array of open files. So open assigns a new entry in that array. Dupe to does an assignment from, takes one pointer, assigns it to another element. And close assigns one element to null. And fork just copies all the pointers. And the thing I'm not showing here, which makes it so like open and close and dupe to maybe aren't quite so simple, is that we have to do some extra work to make sure we don't like leak memory or have dangling pointers, which XP6 handles by keeping track of how many pointers are there to this thing before actually like deleting the meta information about an open file. So questions about our file descriptor manipulation operations? Can I explain why to do the fork section? So fork copies everything in a process. So I'm pointing out that the way that copy works for open files is that we copy the pointers. So you'll have pointers to the same open file. So a notable way in which this has an effect is that if I open a file for writing and I fork and I write from one the parent and write from the child, they're going to be one after the other. They're not both going to write to the same place in the file. Like even though, because they're going to share their offset in the file, for example. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Question, after I do dupe 2, the original FD still points to the same file? Yes. Which is why, in this example, I closed it after the dupe 2. Other questions? OK, so these are all about manipulating our pointers. Of course, we actually want to like read and write data. So the way we do that is with the read and write calls, which you've kind of briefly seen. So these take our file descriptor, which we've learned is an index into that array of open files. They take a buffer, which is just data, and how much to either read or write. And they return something. And they return how much was read or written. So most frequently, that will be the amount you asked to read or write, but not always. So for reading, if I ask to read 1,000 bytes from a file, and the file is only 100 bytes long, well, I don't expect to get all 1,000 bytes. For writing, if I ask to write 1,000 bytes, well, I expect to write 1,000 bytes. But like if I try to write and my network fails, that might not happen. For example, if I'm trying to write to a network device, or I try to write to a disk and I'm out of disk space, that might not happen. These both return -1 on an error where we don't read or write anything, and if so, the error code's an error no. Not being able to read or write something because of, and not being able to, sorry, to read something because we've reached the end of a file is not an error. So in that case, read will return 0. Which is different than returning -1. So if you read from a file and get a 0, that means you just reached the end of the file. If you get a -1, that means something went wrong, like the disk doesn't work, or something like that. So questions about read and write? Yes?
Can we determine the count?
Can we determine the count?
The read and write up to count.
Can we determine count size? Count is an argument. So you pass the amount the maximum amount to read or write. And the implementation does it at most that. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? So an simple example of how you might use this, here's reading one byte at a time. So here I just call read with one, and I append it to a string until I get negative one or zero. If I get negative one, I know something went wrong. If I get zero, I know I just reached the end of the file. Okay, so questions? The end of the file only happens for reading, yes, because if we write past the end of a file, presumably we're going to make the file bigger. Yes?
Is it return zero when you start the end of the file, or when you reach the end of the file?
Does it return a zero when we start the end of the file, or reach the file? It returns zero when there's nothing to read, and we're at the end of the file. If we're before the end of the file, it's going to return a number less than zero, and you have to try read again to know if you're at the end of the file or if something else went wrong. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Good. Other questions? Yeah. Could we start reading not at the beginning of a file? For regular files, yes. But you need some other library called. The one in POSIX is lseek. Or you need to do something like write and then read. But that would be unusual. Other questions? Okay. And for writing, we saw an example before when we talked about the write system call. You know, pass like a string and amount of bytes to write. Okay, so since we know how these things work, let's do this exercise here. And in this exercise, we're using file descriptor 100. My assumption is that 100 is an unused file descriptor number, so like the index of the array is null initially, so I can safely do things with it and not interfere with anything. What are the three arguments for write? We have our path, which is what file. We have our flags, which are based mostly, do you want to read or write? Also other information like, do you want to create something that doesn't exist or truncate? And then we have a mode, which is about permissions, which we haven't talked about, but it's something you need to specify if the file could be created. Oh, you went to the write command? Arguments to the write command?
Yeah.
Arguments to our write command is our file descriptor, our data, and the size of the data.
it so that the standard outcome number is pointed to the outcome, so that both FD and standard out file number
is pointed to the standard problem.
Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks? Okay, so we have another 30 seconds. Okay, who thinks the best answer is option A? Okay, option B. Okay, option C. Option D. Option E, something else. Okay, so we have mostly a split between A and B. So let me go through what I do here. So after this open, if we imagine we're running this kind of normally, so standard out is a terminal, which may not be the case, but let's assume standard out starts as a terminal, then initially standard out goes to a terminal, and after the open, FD goes to the, I'll write TXT to represent the text file, and under the assumption of the question, file descriptor 100 goes to nothing. Then we write A to FD, which we're writing to the text file. So our text file contains an A. And then we do this dupe to operation. Remember, it's from comma to, so it assigns what was in index standard out to index 100. So this means that after that first dupe to, index 100, instead of being none, now points to the terminal. Then we do the other dupe to, which is from FD to standard out. So instead of standard out pointing to the terminal, it now points to the text file. So that's these two dupe to calls. And then we call write to standard out. Standard out points to text according to our bookkeeping here. So we're going to write a B to the text file. Then we call write with FD, with C. FD, according to our bookkeeping, points to the text file, so we're going to put a C in there. Then I close FD. So what does that do? That's going to make FD point to nothing. But it doesn't change any of the other file descriptors. They still point where they used to point. So in particular, when I write to standard out file now, I look up where that points. It points to the text file. So that's going to put a D there. Then I write to 100. I look up where that points. That points to the terminal. So there's an E on my terminal, but not in the text file. So the answer is B. So option B, A, B, C, D, is written to the text file. And also there's an E written to our terminal, assuming you ran this in a terminal. Questions on how I figured out that answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you explain the Duke 2s
again? Can I explain the different?
The Duke 2.
Duke 2. So our Duke 2 is, it takes what the first thing was pointing to, so standard out for this first example, and makes 100 also point to it. So that's why 100 went from pointing to none to the terminal, because that's what standard out pointed to at the time. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay. That's going through to, yes.
Does Duke 2 work on any
pointer? It works on any file descriptors, except possibly ones which are closed.
It
takes indexes, right? So you have to supply an index into that array, and I'm not actually sure what it does if the from file descriptor is closed. I wouldn't do it. Yeah. What is standard out file note? It is literally the constant one. So if you remember, we said that there was this. Convention that file descriptor 0 was standard input 1, so there's constants to represent that so you don't have to memorize it. That's what I was doing. Did that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah, back there. Question, if we swap these Duke 2 statements, would we get A? Yes, because it would end up being the case that when we did this Duke 2 standard out to 100, standard out, rather than copying terminal to 100, would copy text to 100. Pointer to text, instead of a pointer to terminal. Other questions? Yeah.
Since the Duke 2 is dealing with pointers, does the pointer not have an effect where if you change one of them, it's pointing to the other?
So the pointer points to this information about the open file. So if you change information that's in that struct somehow, yes, it would have an effect. But if we look at most of that information, most of this is stuff you can't change after opening it. The only thing you can actually change after opening it is the offset. So everything else, like, yes, if you change stuff in there, it will affect both file descriptors. But for the most part, you can't change where an open file is open to. All you can do is replace it with a pointer to a new one. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
If you sensor closes the file and then the standard out is still pointing to does it still work?
Question, why does the standard out writing still work after we closed a file descriptor which pointed to the same place? So the close operation, contrary to our intuition, all it does is deallocate that array index. Whether this destroys resources related to accessing the file depends on whether then the open file description has nothing pointing to it. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so in our last 5 minutes, I'm going to talk about a special kind of file, one that's particularly relevant to our pipelines, as you might guess by their name. So remember, pipeline was that we could run one program and send its output to another program. And one way we could do this is we could write the first program's output to a regular file, then have the second program read from that file. This is not actually very attractive because basically we'd have to run the first program, then run the second, and if the first program produces a gig of output, we're producing a gig of output. So instead, we'd like it something where one program writes somewhere and the other program reads directly from that, and pipes are a special kind of file that POSIX implements that provide that functionality. So you put bytes in one end with write, and you read bytes at the other end with read. There's going to be a library called pipe, which creates one of these by giving you file descriptors that point to the pipe. And the way our pipe library call works is we call pipe with an array of two file descriptors, because we're going to have a separate file descriptor for the read end of the pipe and the write end of the pipe. And this can return an error, like if we're out of memory, and if not, we have a read file descriptor and a write file descriptor. And the typical use of this is that we're going to call pipe to create these two file descriptors, and then we're going to make some child processes, and from one process we're going to do some writing, and from the other we're going to do some reading. And when we write to this file descriptor from one process and read from another, the OS will pass the information between the two processes, and it will do it in a way which is more efficient than the idea of like a big temporary file, because like if we pass a gigabyte, we're not going to write a gigabyte to disk somewhere. Instead, we're going to like pass it one piece at a time, and then the operating system will know to like discard it because we already read it. Okay, so questions on how pipes. So our basic strategy for implementing pipelines is going to be the same sort of thing we do for redirecting, where if we have a pipeline which is like foo to bar, we're basically going to do foo. You could do the equivalent of running, wrong direction. Foo with its output redirected somewhere, and bar with its input redirected somewhere, where that somewhere is a write end or read end of the pipe, rather than a normal file. But otherwise, the logic is very similar. And the only sort of complicated part is that we have to get these pair of file descriptors probably before we spawn foo and bar, because they need to both share them. Okay, so questions about pipes? Yeah. So how do you read? How do you create a pipe? So your API is that you call this pipe library call, and it gives you file descriptors, and that's the only way you're going to access the pipe. So obviously in the kernel, they're going to have some actual data structures with stuff other than two indices, but you don't get to access those directly. All you get to do is read, write, open, close, or so close, do, to, etc. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so next time we'll talk more about how pipes work, and then start talking about processor scheduling.